You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Justin Wong toku ingoa. Ki te whakarongo koe ki te Wire marunga irerangi pōho mō hine rā. Te roa teko mā wōru o kohi tātea. Kia ora, you're tuned into the Thursday Wire with me, Justin Wong, on 95 BFM. I will be with you on the hour from now up to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Sadly, it's only me alone in the studio today. My usual producer, Iana Piper-Hillian, is feeling a little bit under the weather, so she cannot be here today, sadly. But fear not, she will be back next week. We wish her well. But on the show today, Northland communities are going ahead with their COVID-19 checkpoints without police support. National's police spokesperson Simeon Brown will be joining us live in the program shortly. Speaking of the National Party, the party is also planning to contest the Māori seats at the next election, as reported by One News last night. We have the University of Auckland's lecturer in politics and international relations, Dr. Lara Greaves, on what does that mean. And the Australian government is planning to force tech companies to pay news outlets for sharing their content. We also have the National Party's Melissa Lee. I apologise in advance for all the National Party news content this today. We usually have the Health Minister, Andrew Little, weekly chat, but unfortunately he's unavailable today. As usual, get in touch with me throughout the show with your thoughts you have heard on the show. You can do so by texting me on the text machine by 5395 or Waimai Rane. Our telephone lines are open from on 309-3879. As usual, you can catch all these stories by more on podcast after the show on the 95BFM website. And let's get into the show.
Function only when you got sick days. Ain't got the time to smell the flowers where I roll. So I'm told, 9 to 5, got to work to stay alive. Machine talker, receive my audio. I'm online, just to let you know. Machine walker, receive my video. I'm online. Channel surfing just to find a window out. Mystic nature deep within just plays about. 7 days I put my shoulder to the grind till I find of mind, unless somebody phones me. Machine talker, receive my audio. I'm online, just to let you know.
Well, what a phenomenal thing for you to say.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. Now, on Tuesday, former Te Tai Tokerau MP Hone Harawira announced that members of the Te Tai Tokerau Border Control will reopen the community-run COVID-19 checkpoints. The Northland Police have not supported the idea and have said while the country remains at COVID-19 alert level 1, there is no need for checkpoints, although the support the kaupapa of keeping the Northland community safe. Now, police have already shut down the community checkpoints in Northland, citing traffic safety concerns, but the National Party spokesperson on police, Simeon Brown, has criticised the call for these checkpoints, saying that a lawful mandate by the government is needed to approve such a move. And he joins me now. Kia ora.
Kia ora, how are you?
I'm doing good. So why don't you think these community checkpoints should be in place?
Look, firstly, I can understand the concern in the Northland community around this most recent COVID-19 case and the additional cases which were announced last night. It is very concerning, and I think it is understandable that the people involved in these operations are wanting to keep their whānau and their community safe from COVID-19. But the reality is that any checkpoints which are put on public state highways should be authorised by the police and run by the police. They are state highways. People are free to travel as we're still at level one. And so any checkpoints should be run by the government, authorised by the government, and done based on health advice, not simply because someone has decided to take the law into their own hands.
Right, but now these checkpoints are already being taken down by the police because of traffic concerns. What do you think of this?
Oh, look, that's pleasing. That's pleasing to hear. The reality is they should have stepped in sooner to ensure they didn't even go up in the first place. So putting a checkpoint on a major state highway is very dangerous, very dangerous thing to do. There was a precedent set last year during COVID-19 lockdowns where these checkpoints were put in place illegally, and essentially the groups which are setting these up have taken from the fact that they were allowed to do it then that they are allowed to do it again now. The police need to make it very clear that it is illegal to put in place these checkpoints, and that any checkpoints that are put in place are run by the government, authorised by the government, and must be based upon health and must be put in place only where the health advice says so.
Right, but coming up next week, it's the Auckland Anniversary Weekend and Waitangi Day Weekend coming up in the next 2 weeks, and Northland is expecting an influx of people holidaying in this area. So by not setting up checkpoints, do you think is the risk of a spread of COVID-19 in Northland not a relevant concern for these residents?
Oh, look, I think it's very concerning, the recent outbreak, but ultimately that's a question for the health officials to have to answer. They have to make sure that our quarantine system, government has responsibility to make sure our quarantine system is working, that our testing and tracing is up to scratch. Those are the questions which will inform whether the government does authorise, if needed, any checkpoints. But the reality is, individuals, whilst justifiably concerned, shouldn't be taking the law into their own hands and setting up checkpoints as they feel fit. The reality is we have to follow the health advice, we have to follow the decisions, and we have to have these decisions made in an orderly way so that we don't end up with people taking the law into their own hands.
Right, but bearing in mind that Māori are more likely to have negative health impacts, not because of COVID-19, and maybe in general, should there be an autonomy for these communities to protect itself when there is risk involved?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the reality is these are public state highways and people are free to travel. We still live at alert level one in New Zealand. The government has a system in place to determine the risk. Their job is to make sure that they keep New Zealanders safe from COVID-19, taking into account all of the risks that it has to all of our different populations across New Zealand. So if checkpoints are required, that's something that the government needs to make the decision of. They need to be authorised by the government, by the police, and manned by the police to ensure that they take place in an orderly and safe fashion. At this stage, though, according to what the government has said, we're still at level one, and therefore there's no need for these. But the reality is all New Zealanders should be following the public health advice that is issued by the government, taking precautions. But I do also understand the concern of these communities, and I do appreciate that, you know, they're not feeling confident in the fact that we've now had three cases of COVID-19 come through our isolation facilities, which are meant to be about isolation. That's what they feel, and we've seen the virus actually spreading within these isolation facilities.
National Party's Simeon Brown, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too.
And I wish some of your dozy mates in the media had got a fix on their job and started being reporters and journalists, not editorialists and analysts, which they're not qualified to do. Prison company accepted, of course.
The Wire.
And that was the National Party's police spokesperson, Simeon Brown. Let me know what your thoughts are on police, on the community checkpoints now they have been taken down by police in Northlands. And the number to let me know your thoughts, if you want to text me, is 5395. But if you want to call in, the number is 309-379. Ki te whakarongo koe ki te waia marunga irirangi pōho. You're tuned into the Thursday Wire. It's 18 past 12 and we will go on a break. We'll be right back.
This is a COVID-19 announcement. Over summer, keep protecting your whānau and communities by practicing good hygiene, isolating and calling Healthline if you feel unwell, and using the NZ COVID Tracer app with Bluetooth tracing turned on.
Nothing says summer like the smell of sunscreen, a picnic on the beach, crisp salad, succulent dip, and the best organic sourdough either side of the Bombays. Bread and Butter make real sourdough, supporting organic practices with New Zealand-grown grains and the best locally supplied ingredients. Bread and Butter, for bread that's better. Three stores across Auckland, Grayland, Milford and Ponsonby. And coming soon to the Coast Plaza in Whangaparoa. Order online at breadandbutter.nz.
Hakarongo mai, it's Māori words. Because he waka eke noa.
Koko, swimming to swim.
Ah, summer, absolutely fantastic. I'm off to the beach for an invigorating cocoa.
Dude, it's raining.
It's summer, time for a cocoa.
It's forecast for thunderstorms.
Summer, cocoa.
Seat yourself.
Cocoa, swimming to swim.
Māori words, karawhiua, give it a go.
Welcome to Games Dungeon, how may I help you?
Just after a B card.
Shiny or standard?
Just how it comes.
I'm not seeing it in my Magic the Gathering Price Companion.
I think it's just digital.
Digimon. If you want kids stuff, try the Collector's Emporium.
There's only one place to get a B card. Win, win, win sick prizes, get incredible discounts, and help us stay Auckland's best radio station since forever. Uh-huh. Sign up for a B card from just $4.20 a month and support independent media. Go to 95bfm.com/signup. Perfect.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. Now, the National Party. The National Party is looking likely to contest the Māori electorate seats at the next election, as reported by One News last night. It comes as a reversal of party policy to not contest the Māori electorate for the past since MMP was launched in 1996, and the party has since had brief policies of pushing for the abolishing the Māori electorates altogether. I spoke to the University of Auckland's politics lecturer, Lara Greaves, about this, and I asked, what does that mean?
I think this is generally quite a positive move. For decades and decades, Labor sort of owned the Māori seats in a way, so they consistently won the Māori seats for decades and decades, and that was not necessarily the best thing for democracy, and not the best thing for democracy in the Māori seats and moving Māori policy forward, because I think let's kind of go back to that fundamental idea that the contest of ideas is a positive thing, and effective opposition is a positive thing. We now see the Māori Party as being effective opposition to Labour in these seats, but I think having that opposition on the right is quite good in order to sort of push Labour along and to push the Māori Party along and kind of challenge the ideas that they might put forth. And this is just generally positive for democracy, because these ideas, when they're challenged, people find hold in them and things move forward. So I think that's a positive there. And I think that this also signals the fact that they might be less likely to contest the idea of the Māori electorate. So National has been quite vocal in the past, especially with Don Brash and the Orewa speech, but also subsequent leaders, that they kind of aren't supporting the Māori electorates, the whole idea behind the Māori electorates. And a lot of us working in the Māori electorate space kind of get a bit sick of this, because rather than discussing whether this is the most effective sort of way to represent Māori and for there to be treaty partnership, instead of discussing that, we end up spending all of our time sort of defending the idea of the Māori electorate existing. So I think National signalling that they're going to run, it's going to be more hypocritical in the future if they then turn around and try to get rid of the seats.
Right, but do you think Reckon National has a chance of those seats while Labour has had a hold of them for so long?
I think they have pretty much zero chance of winning one of the Māori electorates. I think one of the reasons that I would, if I were National, would run candidates in those seats is to contest the party vote. And we've seen this, you know, over the last sort of 25, 30 years of MMP elections, that there will be candidates running in seats, the primary purpose of which is to get out the party vote. And I think that just these National candidates running in those Māori electorates, and say turning up to a Māori electorate debate, gives more Māori voters exposure to National Party ideas And, you know, some people might be undecided voters sitting there going, oh, actually, National sounds reasonable. And then they become a National Party voter rather than specifically for the candidate. I think that that would be, if I was National, that would be my strategy.
Considering the National Caucus now has only very few Māori MPs, does it need to be... Do they have to change their strategy on better representation?
Well, yeah, at the moment they've got two Māori MPs, Dr. Shane Rete, their deputy leader, and their former leader, Simon Bridges. And, you know, we kind of joke, oh, well, National's got more guys called Chris in their caucus than Māori. And that is a really serious concern. Study after study has shown that, like, the more diversity around a decision-making table, whether it be a business table or sort of like the cabinet table, the kind of better quality decisions that they ultimately make. And fundamentally what's going to happen in, say, like 6 years' time maybe, or maybe three, maybe six, maybe nine, at some point National's going to be the government. And that decision-making table is going to look a lot less diverse than, or a lot less representative than what the Labor, the current cabinet table looks like. And I think that's going to be quite an interesting cultural and identity-based conversation that pops up at the time. Generally, I think that National did have some great sort of candidates on their list, some sort of young Māori up-and-comers, but they were so far down the list that they didn't get in. I think that this kind of step towards having running candidates in the Māori electorates does show that they're going to nominate, you know, at least sort of 7 Māori across these electorates, because conventionally people who run in the Māori electorates are Māori ethnicity. So that's something that we can see as a step forward. I guess it's all going to depend on how far up the list that they put these Māori candidates and the extent to which they value sort of these more representative, more diverse voices coming through in future elections.
But going back to the Labour Party, do you think their influence in the Māori electorates is slipping now they've lost Wairiki in the last election, and some of the current Māori MPs have returned in a reduced majority and they've been shunned by Ratana this year?
I think that Māori and the Labour Party, and the Labour Party more generally, have some real challenges in terms of Māori policy issues and those Māori electorates going forward. It's looking like, in terms of the Māori Party, they're kind of thinking that they could win like 4 or 5 Māori electorates in the next election, and that's actually quite possible, because if we look at the last election result, there was people were calling it like a red wash, an overwhelming red tide, like, you know, this landslide victory, and using all of this dramatic language, because Labour did, you know, we never thought we would see a majority government like this, and that's what Labour pulled off. So, but the Māori electorates kind of were a little bit against that, and just with that overwhelming huge amount of support for Labour in this last election, we can kind of expect that to drop generally in the next election. And I think at that point, a lot of those electorates will be sort of vulnerable to being won by the Māori Party. And I think that, if we think of political parties as kind of motivated to win votes, if we go back to sort of the theory of the existence of political parties, I think that that could be quite a motivating factor to move forward on Māori political issues. On the other hand, you see that Labour will try to hold their sort of reputation as being a centrist party and hold some of that centre vote. And so that's some quite challenging interests to balance going forward, especially given that from all possible indications at this point, it looks like the Māori Party in its current form would be more likely to go into coalition with a left-wing government than a right-wing government, that they wouldn't make that mistake again. So it kind of looks to me like, from a strategic kind of slightly evil point of view, that if you lose a lot of those Māori voters on the left, try to hold on to those centrist voters, those Māori voters on the left are only going to head towards the Greens or towards the Māori Party. So from that, again, evil kind of political strategy point of view, like, I think a lot of us would hope generally that Labour starts to, you know, use some of their mandate to forward treaty interests and equity policy and Māori policy. But strategically, again, from that idea that they're this, you know, political party and political parties are self-motivated and evil, you can see arguments for why they wouldn't do that.
That was Lara Greaves of the University of Auckland. Let me know what you think. You're listening to The Wire. We're now going for another break.
Sunday afternoons, Christmas films in July with you, the canon of Baltimore tales, our crafty looks when there's nothing to wear.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. This morning, the government announced a number of measures that they say will help meet New Zealand's 2050 carbon neutral target, create new jobs and boost innovation. The four key initiatives announced are to mandate a lower emitting biofuel blend across the transport sector, pass a clean car import standard legislation this year to cut emissions and fuel costs, and to only purchase zero emissions public transport buses starting from 2025, and to ensure the entire public transport bus fleet is decarbonized by 2035. Julianne Genta, the transport spokesperson for the Green Party, joins me now to speak on this governor announcement. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
What is the Green Party's position on these initiatives?
We're really happy to see this progress, and in particular, many of these initiatives are things that we have been pushing for since last term. When I was Associate Minister of Transport, I undertook a lot of work on the vehicle emissions standards, and I'm really pleased to see the Labor government pick that up and implement it. Obviously, the Green Party policy goes much further, and I would say that we are going to have to do a lot more in the transport space to truly decarbonize and get the livable cities that people want.
Is it significant that the government has focused on transport when it comes to taking climate action?
Well, the government is going to need to focus on transport, particularly in this decade. It's really important that we do more to reduce emissions, and that means cleaning up the vehicles we're using and the fuel we're using, which is what most of the announcements today is about. So it's about low emissions vehicles, zero emissions buses, incorporating biofuel into diesel, which gives you an immediate emissions reduction in all of the diesel vehicles and heavy trucks that are on the road right now. But of course, we're also going to have to do more to make our transport system more efficient. And that's where the Green Party is saying, well, we need to invest much more in rapid public transport, streets that are great for walking and cycling locally, and rail, freight, and coastal shipping, and passenger regional rail.
How is going decarbonizing the public transport fleet and buses going to create new jobs?
It depends on where we're sourcing the buses from. I mean, you'd have to ask the government. They're the ones who are making that statement, but I suppose if they're building the buses here in New Zealand, then that's a potential to create new jobs. Definitely there will be wider benefits than just decarbonization from moving to electric buses or zero emissions buses. And one of the biggest benefits is going to be reduction in noise and air pollution in our city centres.
Right. But still focusing on the electrical buses. Now, the decarbonizing of New Zealand's public transport fleet is obviously an important environmental step, but by doing that, diesel and petrol run vehicles have to go somewhere when they are not used anymore. So is the Green Party...
Well, they're all going to come to the end of their life at some point anyway. I mean, what this is about is the new vehicles being brought into New Zealand or being built in New Zealand. So when we're procuring new buses, they're going to be zero emissions entirely by 2025. I mean, I would like to have seen that number be a little bit sooner that year. And that's the same with cars and trucks on the roads. The first step is making sure that the ones that we're bringing into the country are low emissions and very soon to be zero emissions only, is what the Green Party would say. The government hasn't announced that yet. They've just announced a target of 105 grams of carbon as an average across the fleet by 2025, which is a good first start. But like other countries, we're going to have to signal, an end date to the importation of fossil fuel vehicles.
Right. But what about the fossil fuel vehicles that were left over when the entire fleet is carbonized. Is the Green Party concerned about the waste that this could cause, and is there a solution for this?
Well, I mean, ultimately, those cars are probably going to be on the road for some years, and we're going to, like, we already have a huge fleet of vehicles, many of which are older than is ideal, and it will be very important from a waste minimization point of view that we have a plan for recovering what can be recovered from those vehicles, recycling what can be recycled, and disposing of them responsibly.
It is made clear by the ministers who announced these policies, as well as yourself, there is always more to be done. And what are the steps that the Greens would like to see the government take in this term to do more to tackle the climate crisis?
The Green Party is championing a real revolution in our investment in transport infrastructure. We need a step change in public transport, not just zero-emission buses. We need fast, modern, light rail. We need rapid regional rail. That has the potential to be a huge economic stimulus to our economy, but also to shape cities and help achieve housing affordability if it's paired with our public housing builds. We need to make walking and cycling a normal, safe activity and means of getting around our local neighborhoods. That's incredibly cost effective, and it has benefits for the climate as well as for health and happiness of our people. And we need to have a real comprehensive plan around phasing out fossil fuel vehicles completely in Aotearoa, New Zealand, shifting freight as much as possible through zero emissions rail or coastal shipping, and using electric or other zero emissions heavy vehicles for the last mile.
Right. Julie Angenta, Green Party Transport Spokesperson. Ngā mihi, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
And that was Julie Angenta, the transport spokesperson for the Green Party. But moving on. The Australian government is planning to force tech companies to negotiate a fair payment with news organisations for using their content, such as showing them in Facebook's news feed or Google's search. While announcing the change, the Australian government claimed that the law is to address the loss of advertising revenue by traditional revenues, with every $100 of advertising spending, more than half goes to Google, about 20, almost 30% goes to Facebook, and only 20% for the rest of everyone else. And to ensure that the news media business are fairly remunerated for the content they generate and helping to sustain public interest journalism in Australia, media companies are encouraged to make commercial deals with Facebook and Google within these regulations. But it gives the regulations gives them a framework to bargain and reach a binding agreement. If they can't agree, an arbiter will implement a final offer arbitration model to help determine the level of payment. The digital platforms will have to give the media 14 days advance notice of deliberate algorithm changes that affect news media businesses. And to keep bargaining costs low for smaller companies, the digital platforms can make standard offers, or media companies can bargain collectively. If the tech companies refuse to negotiate, they will pay a penalty of $10 million Australian, or 10% of their annual turnover in Australia, or three times the benefit obtained, whichever is the greater. So far, these tech companies like Google and Facebook have argued against the move and threatened to pull out of the Australian market if the code is passed, saying the law is unfair and it would set a global precedent. Here's the managing director of Google in Australia, Mel Silver, in a Senate hearing.
Australia makes our rules for things you can do in Australia. That's done in our parliament. It's done by our government.
Apologies, that was not the correct clip. That was Prime Minister Scott Morrison. But here is who because Mr. Morrison has said any threats to by the tech companies to pull out of the Australian market will not sustain. He's still the Prime Minister.
And that's how things work here in Australia. And people who want to work with that in Australia, you're very welcome. But we don't respond to threats.
Facebook has threatened that it will block Australian users from sharing news on their newsfeed, while Google is saying they will pull its search engine from the Australian market and are already conducting a trial that removes Australian news stories from its search results. Now, here is Mel Silver, the Managing Director of Google in Australia.
The principle of unrestricted linking between websites is fundamental to search, and coupled with the unmanageable financial and operational risk, if this version of the code were to become law, it would give us no real choice but to stop making Google search available in Australia.
So, given that the New Zealand media landscape was looking financially shaken for the past few years, should we introduce legislation similar to the ones that Canberra was proposing? Well, we tried to reach the Minister for the Digital Economy and Communications, Dr. David Clark, but he did not get back before the deadline. But his counterpart in the National Party, Melissa Lee, does not think so. Here's Melissa Lee.
I think I've already sort of commented saying that I think the Australian government's actually overreaching on that one. What I actually said before the election and through the election campaign was that, you know, we actually need a proper review of everything in New Zealand, including the media regulations, and speak to stakeholders and everyone involved to actually make sure that we have the settings right. And I think what you actually find is that, you know, the World Wide Web was, you know, search engines not, I mean, imagine if everybody who actually searches the web actually has to, you know, and the search engine has to pay everyone. I mean, you know, rightly, Google decided that that's not what it was meant to do, and it's unfair, and they are now threatening to pull out of Australia.
Right, but given that New Zealand, the media industry recently has struggled financially, should news outlets get the revenue, get the advertising revenue they deserve instead of the big tech companies getting all the revenue?
Well, the thing is that how does a search engine actually get the revenue that's supposed to go to the media? I think it's providing a link actually to the news media. If anything, the media actually take advantage of the fact that people go to Google or other search engines to actually find them. If anything, media should perhaps pay them. Do you know what I mean? It's a link. It's not like, you know, fair enough. That I can understand that, fair enough. If they are actually showing snippets of the news, then they're utilizing, they're basically taking the news from one media outlet and actually showing it on Google. Google should, you know, there needs to be a pathway where they need to negotiate a fee for that, and I'm all for that.
Right.
But I think if it's purely a link to the site, let's say, somebody wants to find out student radio, and they go Google and they find BFM, does that mean that Google has to pay you for the link?
Right.
How are the people supposed to find you without the search engine? I mean, you are provided a service by Google to actually sort of get to you, right? But the thing is that if they're showing your news on Google without permission, then they need to pay for it, for example. This is what I'm talking about. That's the reason why I say there needs to be a clear review and work out what is a fair deal for everyone.
What is the ideal situation? What do you hope to what do you mean by a fair deal?
Well, I think you need to actually sort of look at the issue individually. I mean, you know, one of the things that you would actually find is that, you know, I think France, Google is actually paying the media for snippets. But the thing is that it's not the same as the search engine link. As I was actually saying, if Google is just providing a link to BFM, they shouldn't have to pay BFM for that link. So there needs to be a pathway. If I click on the link to BFM and I'm actually reading your news, then there's got to be a pathway for me to be able to pay to actually see it.
What's his title? The guy in charge, Dr. Ashley Broom?
The Director General of Health.
Yeah.
The Wire. That was National MP Melissa Lee. The time is 13 to 1. We will go for another break. You're listening to The Thursday Wire.
Took a lead weight and tissue white, stole out my window, scaled a great height, hung by thread from the guttering. When the morning came, it was still swinging, a gleaming rod. Because I'd learned about mass, plumb lines hurtling down straight in school, familiar with the terms, but not the way it looked. Old bog stopping.
Seven-letter word for street fighter?
No idea.
Okay, what about tree trunks and six? What does that even mean?
Shit, you're useless. Oh. Don't you know anything?
Oh, well, I know tonight at Ponsonby Social Club there's
a tribute to MF Doom, performed by members of Yokozuna and Avant Dale Bowling Club.
Go on.
And tomorrow,
G-Lews, live with support from Tito and Chip Matthews.
Sweet as! One of those actually solved 13 across. Cheers. Same old Ponsonby Social Club, 152 Ponsonby Road.
This is a COVID-19 announcement. Over summer, keep protecting your whānau and communities by practicing good hygiene, isolating and calling Healthline if you feel unwell, and using the NZ COVID Tracer app with Bluetooth tracing turned on.
No candlelit dinners, no commercial mush. Celebrate Anti-Valentine's Day at MOTAT with fun, dancing, karaoke, live music, the Love Police and all sorts of antics. MOTAT Anti-Valentine's, Saturday, February 13, 7 to 11 p.m. Tickets just $20 or $15 for students from motat.nz. R18.
Oh, what a day. I love e-scootering. The great outdoors, Richmond Road.
Oh, I've been loving that new Drill Wave Crew Synthesis with a C.
Well, we're signed up to My Music Bag. It's so flex. Whatever you're into, they send the same but different stuff and ready to bang portions.
Isn't that kind of cheating? I mean, I'm old school. Suggested YouTube videos, Shazam stuff off Netflix. And don't you have all those leftover bass lines?
Obviously, I donate the bass lines here at Vinny's.
The Swap Meet. Old collector guys bring you disco, boogie, funk, and soul to get you cooking. The Swap Meet with Jabden Kirk. Sundays 4 till 7 on 95 BFM.
Oi, don't leave your baselines lying around here.
That was The Wire.
Koira te hota kakatoa mo tēnei rā. That's all for today. For the Thursday Wire today, the 28th of January. Nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I korero me kere mō tēnei rā. A big thank you to those who talked to us today, and of course to our news director Jemima Houston. Apologies if there was a couple of hiccups today, but Eana Paivahelian will be back next week, and so is myself. Ka hoki mai mātou a te rā wiki. I'll leave you with Sigrid for the next 3 hours with the 124. Have a good week. Mā te wā.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.